Hi, everybody. Jennifer Schaus here, coming to you live from Washington, D.C. today. And thank you for joining us in our complimentary Webinar Wednesday series. This year, we've got two webinars that we're hosting. Wednesdays are our FAR supplements, and then Friday are the corresponding playbooks. You probably found out about today's webinar through our newsletter, which reaches over 23,000 federal contractors. We do have advertising options available there. And our webinar library, which they're all complimentary, is now over 500 webinars thick or deep. And you can find all of those on our YouTube channel, as well as on our website. If you go to the website, everything there is organized by topic that you're looking for. If you go to YouTube, you can probably just type in some keywords. If you want to put on your own webinar with us, we also do have that option. Quick blurb about us. We are based in downtown Washington, D.C. and provide consulting services for established government contractors. This includes product, service, and software firms. We primarily help with GSA schedules, but there's other services that we provide, which you can find on our website. This webinar series, again, which is Wednesdays, is complimentary and everything is recorded. So if you signed up and you have to log off early, we will send you the recording, which will be a link to the YouTube recording. You'll also get a copy of the PowerPoint. And again, the Wednesday is the FAR supplements. We do have a webinar coming up, complimentary, in our COVID contracting series. This will be Thursday, March 17th at 12 o'clock. And the registration link is there in the lower left-hand corner. If you're looking for that link, again, the slides will be sent out and you can just click on that to get to the webinar. We've also got an in-person networking event coming up at the end of the month. It'll be the last Monday in March, which is Monday, March 28th. The usual spot where we've been for the last 15 years at the Kennedy Center, which is on the KC Cafe, which is the terrace level. We expect about 150 to 200 federal contractors. We're securing some federal agencies to come, and we do have sponsorship opportunities available. The link is at the bottom of your screen, which is govconmarch2022.eventbrite.com if you're looking to purchase tickets before prices go up. Okay, this is just a quick glance at the schedule. So this is for the Wednesday schedule. So today we're covering DLA. The series goes through August 24th and we wrap it up with the Veterans Affairs. And then on the Fridays is the corresponding playbook. So this Friday, which is March 4th, we will have a playbook series, which is how to do business with DLA. We've got panelists on that call. We'll be talking about business opportunities, contracting trends, where the contract dollars have gone over the last couple years for those agencies. And again, Friday will be DLA, and we'll wrap up in August with VA. These again are complimentary and the schedule's on our website. Okay, a quick shout out to our sponsors and then we're gonna dig into the presentation. So thanks for bearing with me here. First up is the Virginia PTAC. This is the Procurement Technical Assistance Center. They are co-located at the George Mason University in Fairfax, Virginia. They offer one-on-one counseling and training for government contractors. They have a training calendar, which is accessible through the link that you see there on the screen. You can also send them an email or shoot them an email or give them a phone call. Contact information is there on your screen. We also want to thank the Federal Business Council. They provide virtual and in-person events typically at government agencies. They do have their annual procurement fair. If you're looking for additional information about the FBC and their schedule of events, their website's in the lower center of your screen. You've got a contact name and phone number as well. Okay, so today we are talking about DLA and covering the FAR supplement on DLA. We've got Mark Amateo with us. He's been a great friend and colleague over the last, well, many, many years. And Mark, I will mute myself, give you the floor, and just let me know whenever you're ready for your next slide. Sure. Thanks again for joining us today.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jennifer. So hi, everybody. I'll just say a couple of words about me and my law firm. So I've been practicing law for over 20 years. and I'm the founder of the Amadeo Law Firm. And the firm has locations in DC and in Maryland, and we help clients with all of their government contracting legal needs. And that includes negotiations with teaming partners, negotiations or post-award negotiations with contracting officers, and then general FAR, DFARs, and regulatory compliance. And we help our technology clients in protecting their valuable technology in their dealings with both the government and their private sector partners. So, you know, if you have any questions about me, you have my information up there on the slide, and then you'll get some information at the end of the presentation. Next slide, please. So today we're going to talk about the Defense Logistics Acquisition Directive, or DLAD. But before we do that, let's just talk for a few minutes about the Defense Logistics Agency. Now, DLA is the Logistics Support Agency for the Department of Defense. And as the Logistics Support Agency, it really serves two general functions. The first is to acquire things that DoD needs on a day-to-day basis. And the second is then to distribute the things that it acquires to DoD and clients, wherever they may be. Now, DLA started out as the Defense Support Agency, and it was created under Robert McNamara during the Kennedy administration. And it was created so that there would be more uniformity in supplies and in materials that were used by the military branches. And it was also created to provide a more uniform process for buying those materials and supplies. So, you know, for example, you can imagine just how inefficient it would be if you were, let's say, a plumbing contractor or an electrical contractor, and you had, let's say, one connection or one type of connection or fitting that might work in a building that's occupied by one branch, but might not work in a building that's occupied by another branch. So early on, the focus or much of the focus of the Defense Supply Agency was in streamlining the procurement process and then creating a more uniformity in the parts that were used by the different branches. Now, the scope of what DLA buys now goes way beyond just parts. So it's still in charge of acquiring repair parts for military hardware and consumable hardware like nuts and bolts and washers. But now the scope of what DLA buys covers nearly everything that's consumed by warfighters and their equipment, or that's consumed on a military base or installation. So we listed up there the four of the subordinate commands under DLA and the kinds of supply chains that those commands manage. So, for example, DLA Troop Support manages the acquisition of food and textiles and construction materials and medical supplies, and that includes pharmaceuticals. But DLA doesn't just buy the items. It's also in charge of warehousing and distributing them. So in a sense, DLA is like the Amazon for the Department of Defense. And in the same way that Amazon runs a complex network of distribution centers and warehouses and fulfillment centers that acquire products from suppliers and then distributes them to customers. Well, DLA is kind of like that for the Department of Defense. Next slide, please. So the federal regulatory system for acquisitions and procurements can be found in Title 48 of the Federal Register. Now, Chapter 1 is made up of the FAR, or the Federal Acquisition Regulation. And then what follows after Chapter 1 are the supplements to the FAR that are specific to the particular federal agency. So Chapter 2 contains the Defense Federal Acquisition Regulation Supplement, or DFARS, which applies generally to all of DOD's acquisitions. And then you've got Chapter 5, which contains the GSAR. You've got Chapter 8, which contains supplements to the VA procurements. And then you've got Chapter 54, which contains the regulatory supplement for the Defense Logistics Agency. And that regulatory supplement is the Defense Logistics Acquisition Directive, or DLAD. Now, just to be clear, when DLA is buying something for one of the DOD agencies or the branches of the military, that acquisition will still be subject to FAR and will also be subject to the applicable rules under DFARS and then the additional guidance in DOD's procedures, guidance, and information, or PGI. So whenever the directive applies to a DLA procurement, it's as a supplement to both FAR and then these other regulatory guidance. And in fact, as a practical matter, when it comes to the rules that impact a contractor's behavior under a DLA contract, in many instances, the applicable rules are only going to come out of FAR and DFARS, and there are a few reasons for that. So first, unlike other FAR supplements like the DFARS or even the DOE supplement, where the scope of what's covered can be quite broad and comprehensive, DLAD is more spotty or more pointed. So for example, in a number of instances, when there is a change or supplement to a FAR rule by the directive, that change may just be a tweak to the FAR rule that simply specifies the particular DLA office that has to take a particular action under the rule. And this leads me to the second reason why DLAD may not be as consequential from a contractor's point of view. And that's because for the most part, the additional guidance or changes that are made by the directive to the FAR rules are really to the parts of the FAR rules that address agency internal actions and decision-making. So a large part of what the directive covers is really a kind of inside baseball or behind-the-scenes activity that it's not going to impact contractors at all. And this is reflected in the number of contract clauses, or really the lack of the number of clauses that are specified by the directive to be inserted into DLA contracts. So when you think about it in general, FAR and DFARS and all of the other supplemental regulations are written as manuals that lay out the rules that agencies have to follow when they're conducting a business with their contractors. But those rules, for the most part, will only impact contractors to the extent they're reflected in clauses that are inserted in their contracts. Well, unlike FAR and unlike DFARS and some of the other regulatory supplements, there are just not that many clauses that DLAD requires to be inserted into DLA contracts. So it's not unusual, and in fact, it may be typical for a DLA contract to only include FAR and DFARS clauses. So next slide, please. So when you look at the structure of the directive, it mirrors the structure of the FAR. So the directive is broken up into the same identical subchapters that appear under FAR, and all of the changes or supplements that are made by the directive to the FAR rules are made to corresponding parts in the directive. Now, before I move on, I just want to quickly address subchapter H here. For a minute. Now, Part 52 in the FAR contains hundreds of FAR clauses that can be inserted into a solicitation or contract, and Part 252 of DFARS contains the hundreds of DFARS clauses that can be inserted. Well, Part 52 of the directive here only has one supplemental clause, and that is a contract clause that covers the use of alternative dispute resolution to resolve disputes with DLA. I mean, that's it. just one clause. Now, there are a handful or so other clauses that are sprinkled throughout the directive that DLA requires contracting officers to insert into DLA solicitations and contracts. And these contract clauses are called procurement notes. And we'll touch on a few in this presentation. But again, even there are not that many DLAD notes or clauses that are required to be inserted. Next slide, please. So if we zoom back out, subchapter A is the general introduction subchapter that basically sets out the general rules of the road for how the directive applies to DLA acquisitions. Now, we're going to go over the subchapters, but really, it's going to be a really high-level bird's eye view of these chapters. We just simply don't have enough time to go into every single rule, the hundreds of rules that are actually in the DLAD. So, so getting back to subchapter A, part one of is the Federal Acquisition Regulation System. It lays out the purpose of the directive and its relationship to FAR, DFARS, and other DoD publications. And the changes that are made by the directive in part one are mostly to specify the particular role or responsibilities of the different departments within DLA or the different responsibilities of contracting officials, like the head of the contracting agency or the contracting officer, or the contracting officer's representative, to name a few. Now, part two sets out the definitions of the terms that are used in the directive. And now part three in FAR addresses particular improper business practices. And the directive tweaks some of those rules by parsing out which officer within DLA is responsible for things like oversight or reporting violations and receipt of whistleblower complaints. Now, part four covers a number of general administrative matters and addresses things like how DLA contracting officers handle contractor deficiency reports, how DLA is supposed to use its electronic bidding system, which is called the DLA Internet Bid Board System, or DIBS, and how DLA contracting officers are supposed to meet cyber incident reporting requirements under DFARS. And again, all of this is kind of under the hood and behind the scenes activity, but there are two areas where part four impacts contractor behavior. So the rules in part four include two notes that are required to be inserted into contracts. There's procurement note H14, which details information that contractors have to provide to DLA on the identity and background of employees who will perform work on a federal facility or who'll need access to a federal information system. And then there's procurement note H16, which is inserted into solicitations and contracts where the performance will occur at a federal facility or on a federal information system. And H16 requires contractors to complete four online courses and to require its workforce to take training and annual refresher courses. Next slide, please. So subchapter B supplements the FAR rules on acquisition planning, which generally covers an agency's pre-award activity. So part five of the directive tweaks some of the rules that relate to things like public displays or synopses of solicitations and announcements of contract awards. Part six adjusts the FAR rules for processing exclusions of sources from competition and justifications for non-competitive procurements. Part seven supplements a few of the FAR rules on things like preparation of acquisition plans and contract management plans and justifications for consolidated and bundled solicitations. And part eight changes or the Part 8 changes under the directive include changes to the rules on the acquisition of audit readiness and audit sustainment services. And it also includes tweaks to the procurement process for training services and to the acquisition of Ability One products. And lastly, it addresses DLA's use of FedMall for federal supply schedule awards. Now, in Part 9, contractor qualifications, the directive covers things like DLA's use of internal DLA tools like the Business Decision Analytics Dashboard and the Defense Contractor Review List. Now, in terms of contractor obligations, Part 9 includes several procurement notes that require bidders to disclose information about their products, including whether they were from products on the qualified products list, or if the contractor has complied with restrictions that require the use of suppliers from the qualified suppliers list of manufacturers, or the qualified manufacturers list, or the qualified testing suppliers list, or the qualified suppliers list for distributors. Now, so Part 11, describing agency needs, generally covers the suitability of products that are delivered to DLA. So the FAR rules that are changed or supplemented by the directive cover item descriptions and specification standards, the traceability of manufacturer or supplier documents, and the use of FAA certified airplane parts. Now, on the contractor side of things, Part 11 introduces two procurement notes. There is procurement note C04, which is essentially a lengthy survey that requires contractors to disclose the condition of the products that they're offering to DLA. And then note C01 requires contractors to update part numbers when they're changed by the manufacturers. And lastly, in Part 12, the directive expands the list of FAR clauses that are required to be inserted into commercial item contract. Now, under FAR, the number of clauses that are required to be inserted into a commercial item contract is pretty limited. So given this expansion, contractors that supply commercial items to DLA are going to have to pay close attention to the FAR clauses that are in their contracts, particularly since they may also have to flow down some of these additional clauses to their subcontractors. Next slide, please. So subchapter C of the FAR sets out different contracting methods and types that agencies can use for their procurements. And the DLA directives make some changes to a few of these FAR rules. So in Part 13, the directive addresses how DLA contracting officers evaluate and document simplified acquisition awards. Now, it also supplements rules on the use of government-wide commercial purchase cards, Ability One purchases, and purchases at or below the micro purchase threshold. Now, Part 13 also sets out two procurement notes for SIDCs. Now, SIDCs are procurements in which the simplified acquisition procedures are applied to indefinite quantity supply or service contracts, and in which the amounts are not expected to exceed the simplified acquisition threshold. Now, lastly, Part 13 supplements the fast payment rules for certain DLA purchases and the rules concerning market research by contracting officers when they're trying to determine if an item is a commercial item. Now, Part 15 supplements the FAR rules by specifying the DLA office that's responsible for source selection, and it also specifies pricing models that DLA contracting officers has to use for any market basket pricing evaluations. It also supplements the FAR with regard to how price analysis for commercial and non-commercial items are conducted. And then lastly, Part 15 parses out the responsibilities within DLA that are related to exceptions to the certified cost or pricing data requirements. Now, Part 16 supplements FAR rules that are related to the determinations on the use of certain kinds of contracts, like long-term or bridge contracts or certain fixed price contracts, indefinite delivery contracts, and time and material contracts. Part 17 supplements the FAR rules on special contracting methods. And from a contractor's perspective, the most intriguing sections of Part 17 may relate to reopener requirements. Now, a reopener requirement is the right of a contractor to obtain an equitable adjustment in a contract price when a condition arises, but the effects of that condition can't be measured precisely. So Part 17 describes the circumstances and the conditions in which DLA will insert this reopener requirement in a contract. Now, lastly, Part 18, it supplements FAR by designating the DLA contracting officer as the person with authority to increase micro purchase and simplified acquisition thresholds for emergency acquisitions. Next slide, please. So subchapter D supplements certain of the aspects of the FAR that cover socioeconomic and labor requirements. So part 19 describes how DLA contracting officers should conduct periodic reviews of automated rewards to see if certain purchases should be set aside for WOSB or HubZone or SDVOSB or 8A businesses. And it also addresses how contracting officers should document their decisions not to set aside their procurements. Now, Part 19 also includes five notes that are inserted into solicitations, and one of them requires offers to identify their small business or socioeconomic status. And then the other four notes, they set out the procedures for how DLA is to award set-asides under combined set-aside procurements. So moving on, Part 22 adjusts the rules under FAR regarding labor laws. So one rule that's tweaked is the FAR rule against the use of products made with child labor. And another tweak is to a rule against the use of mandatory arbitration agreements. Part 23 provides guidance on two FAR rules, one that's related to hazardous material identifications and safety data sheets, and then another rule that relates to COVID-19 safety protocols. And then Part 25 covers foreign acquisitions by DLA. So for example, Part 25 includes a supplement to a FAR rule that includes how a contracting officer documents exceptions to the Buy American Act. And then another rule spells out a process for DLA contracting officers to follow when they want to use end-use certificates when they're exporting things from the U.S. Now, Part 25 also has rules that relate to supplies that are imported by DLA that are exempt from customs and duties. And then lastly, Part 25 has a rule that covers procedures that DLA has to follow to provide contractors access to export-controlled technical information. Next slide, please. So subchapter E provides additional guidance on a few of the requirements that apply to government contracts. So Part 27 provides some additional guidance to DLA contracting officers on the use of DFAR, the DFARS clause that limits the use or disclosure of government information. It also provides rules that DLA has to follow in order to meet export control requirements with regard to technical data. Part 28 imposes a requirement that DLA contracting officers obtain a legal sufficiency for their bonds and consents of surety. And then Part 30 covers some of the rules under FAR that DLA has to comply with in order to obtain waivers of cost accounting standards requirements and to prepare annual reports of cost accounting standard waivers. So Part 32 contains a smattering of supplements and changes to FAR. So for example, Part 32 tweaks rules on how DLA reduces or suspends contract payments when it finds fraud. It also includes Note H15 that's inserted into solicitations and contracts that specify that the DLA can use to require contracts or contractors to submit what's called a transport or proof of delivery in order to get paid. Now, lastly, Part 33 of the directive supplements the rules under FAR for submitting agency protests or disputes and appeals. Now, much of the DLAD supplement here is focused on DLA's review of protests that are filed by contractors with GAO, but it also tweaks some rules on how an agency handles contractor appeals that are submitted to the Armed Services Board of Contractor Appeals. Now, on the contractor side of things, the most significant tweak in Part 33 is the FAR rule on submitting agency-level protests. Now, in particular, the directive requires solicitations to include a process that permits protesters to file an agency-level protest with the contracting officer or to file a request for an independent review by the chief of the contracting office. Next slide, please. So subchapter F of the directive makes some slight changes to four of the six special contracting categories in FAR. So in Part 34, the directive describes the coordination between the contracting officer and the procuring organizations and DLA with regard to documenting waivers of cost and software data reporting requirements for major defense acquisition programs and major automated information systems. Now, Part 37 provides some further guidance to DLA on several rules that relate to acquisition of services, but one procurement note in Part 37 that directly impacts contractor behavior is the procurement note C05, which is inserted in solicitations and contracts when a contract requires professional or skilled employees. So under that note, a contractor has to use key personnel that are identified in this proposal, and it has to submit a request in writing and obtain approval from a contracting officer before making any changes to this key personnel. And also under that note, the qualifications of the new key personnel has to be the same or higher than the qualifications of the personnel that's being replaced. So moving on, Part 38 provides procedures for awarding and administering DLA federal supply schedules. And Part 39 provides instructions and guidance to contracting officers on DLA's acquisition of IT and telecommunication services. Next slide, please. So subchapter G covers a wide variety of contract management issues, and we're not going to spend much time on this because these rules in particular really do focus on under the hood issues. So subchapter G touches on an assortment of rules that set out procedures that DLA contracting officers have to follow for things like documenting contractor performance in CPARs, revising delivery schedules, taking actions to terminate or cancel a contract, reviewing property management policies, using the federal government's first destination transportation program to reduce transportation costs, things like that. Now, from a contractor's point of view, the most pertinent or helpful information may be the formula that's set out in Part 43 that DLA uses to determine the consideration that it will pay when it issues a contract modification. So I went put that formula up there on the slide, and E is the number of extensions that the contractor asks for at the time of the modification. M is the number of months that the contractor has asked for the extension. V is the value of the contract that will be delayed, and D, that's all fixed costs that DLA incurs for writing the modification. So this information may be helpful when a contractor begins to think about pricing a contract modification that it's going to be negotiating with DLA. Well, I think that's it. That's all I have for my presentation. If anyone has any questions, feel free to reach out to me. My information is up there on the slide. So thanks again for listening.
Mark, this was a great presentation, very well organized and laid out. And I felt like I learned a couple things as well. So thank you for sharing your time and your expertise with us and putting together these great slides. As we mentioned earlier, everything has been recorded. It will be on our website and on our YouTube channel, probably within about 24 hours. So you can check our website or the channel for that. And as a reminder, on Thursday, March 17th at 12 o'clock, we've got a complimentary webinar in our COVID contracting series regarding what federal contractors need to know about COVID mandates. The registration link is in the lower left corner here, and you'll get that with the slides. And again, another reminder that our in-person networking event is Monday, March 28th over at the Kennedy Center. The link to register for either sponsorship or general ticket is at the bottom of that slide. And this concludes our presentation today for our FAR supplement series. So thanks again, Mark, and thanks again to all the audience for making time to participate and listen in today. Friday, we'll cover doing business with DLA, and we do have a government representative who will be one of our panelists on Friday. Thanks again, Mark, and thanks again to the attendees.
Thanks, Chad.